The NBA playoffs begin this weekend, and the Rockets will be the last team to hit the floor. They host the Jazz Game 1 on Sunday night at Toyota Center. Seth, other than winning the series, what is the most important thing you want to see out of the Rockets against the Jazz?
James Harden's floater, 100% completely and totally, is the key to the Rockets surpassing people's expectations and is the biggest difference between the Rockets of today and the Rockets of 2018, 2017, 2016, when good defensive teams learn how to defend the three and then clog the lane to take away the Rockets' go-to options. James Harden's floater is the only thing that can save them. It's what was missing in the embarrassing Spurs disaster of yore, and it is the key for this season.
It's an excellent take.
It is. He's used it three times as much this season as he has before.
It's honestly not talked about enough how he's turned that shot into such a weapon, and it's such a big deal because he's obviously dangerous from three and at the rim, so now you have the floater, and he is essentially unstoppable. And he did not have the floater operating like this in any year he's been in the playoffs. So I agree with you. I'm actually gonna answer differently. For me, the most important thing is figuring out what the rotation is gonna be. Now, I know the rotation changes from Utah to Golden State, hopefully, but you gotta figure out between Gerald Green, Austin Rivers, Daniel House, Kenneth Faried Nene, who can I trust? We need to find out in this series against a pretty good Utah team that's very well coached, that plays good defense, that has one big time player in Donovan Mitchell. Who can I trust among my 6th, 7th, 8th guys? Because that's going to be critically important if the Rockets are going to do some damage in the playoffs. They need to figure out. Mike D'Antoni needs to figure out who he can trust.
Well, and credit to Daryl Morey, because you just mentioned four key names that were not Rockets 6 months ago. And
House, Rivers, Faried.
Yeah.
And then some of those guys have been, you know, in and out of the lineup, like Nene.
Did you say House?
Yeah, House. Okay, so three guys.
But that's still a lot.
There was an article in The Athletic yesterday, an interview with Daryl Morey, and Daryl Morey was really open and honest about how much he was freaking out that first month of the season.
Yep.
Like, just wondering, what the hell did we do wrong? What are we going to do? How do we go forward? It's really cool to see somebody talk about how panicky they were. Usually GMs and coaches want to tell, we maintained a steady course. Morey was freaking the hell out.
Next headline, despite winning six games in a row, the Astros sit four games back in the AL West this morning, and they will face the team that is in first place tonight on the road, the Seattle Mariners. Seth, how much of a threat are the Mariners this season in this division?
I can't trust that they're going to keep this up, obviously. I mean, they can't keep winning at a 90% clip, obviously. Nobody can. But they've had six or more runs nine times so far this season.
Their run differential.
They've had a home run in every single game.
Their run differential is the best in Major League Baseball, plus 42.
This is just typical of an organization that can't do anything right. They can't tank right. This was supposed to be a reset year for the Mariners. I think that they've shown that they can certainly have spurts. They're going to be the equivalent of playing against Michael Vick. That even if it's not a good team, in any given Sunday or evening or Sunday afternoon or anything, they can crush you. They have the ability to just outpower you, and you always have to be nervous about that.
Seattle's fast start has made me raise my eyebrow, Dwayne Johnson style, if I could actually pull that off. But this team's not, they don't have enough staying power. Whenever a team is trying to rebuild, which is what they're trying to do, they lost James Paxton, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, some other guys. They're not really trying to win this season, which makes me believe that at some point, hopefully starting tonight, the Mariners will fall back down to earth.
No, they'll fall back down to earth. They'll finish sub 500, but I feel like this is the kind of team that in any given series can take three of four from you, and you'd kind of get it. Your pitchers have a couple off nights, and things are working for them. They're going to be that boom and bust type of team, with more bust, but so far it's been all boom.
They're hitting a lot of home runs, so the Astros and the Mariners open up a series tonight in Seattle. Wade Miley is on the mound. It's an 8-10 start tonight in Seattle. Next headline, Seth, John Gruden has advice for his new GM, Mike Mayock. Gruden told him, "Don't mess it up. I took a lot of slings to get you three first-round picks." I'm going to do a Texan spin zone here. What would Bill O'Brien's draft advice be to Brian Gain?
I think it's probably the same that a lot of head coaches give to personnel guys. And this is probably the one of the biggest fundamental differences sometimes between some personnel guys and some coaches is the coaches say, just give me a football player. Give me, please.
Give me a guy who can play.
Don't fall in love with the measurables. Don't fall in love with upside. Don't fall in love with, hey, what this guy could be. Give me a damn football player. Like somebody that's actually produced on the field in college instead of some guy that flashes and just is a whole lot of razzle dazzle. That's what it would be. And other than that, it would probably be please. When you draft an offensive lineman, don't mess this up. I'm Bill O'Brien, offensive person, and I've yet to have a really good offense since I've been here. I need somebody to protect my quarterback.
Bill O'Brien's advice to Brian Gain, the way I'm thinking, is give me one or two offensive linemen who can actually play and give me a cornerback who I can trust in man coverage.
You know what it's not going to be? It's not going to be whatever it was when Rick Smith was the GM. And it sounded a whole lot like Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien didn't have the amount of control or power that Gary Kubiak did when he was here, when it came down to draft day. I mean, like, just the way that Bill O'Brien described how draft day would go and the decisions that Rick Smith was making, like, including in trading up for Deshaun Watson, that was described very much as, like, this is Rick Smith's decision, I'm going to go up and get him, and Bill just lets Rick do his thing.
Yes.
You know, whereas when Kubiak and Rick Smith were drafting together, it was, they'd take votes on players. You know, they voted to draft J.J. Watt.
I wonder how much of that is Bill and Brian Gain being such good friends. That if, does that make sense?
Like, I think it was written into the contracts.
I get
Rick
what you're
Smith
saying.
And Bill O'Brien.
But more, what I'm saying is this. So you're right that if you go back 2 years ago and you do read-ups on what happened to trade up for Deshaun Watson,
yeah,
it was Rick Smith going up and pulling the trigger on that decision.
Yeah, he told Bill O'Brien, I'm going to go get him.
But like, if you and I were working in the front, in those roles together,
yeah,
and you and I are friends, and you made that move, then I'd feel like, yeah, we're aligned, we're doing it. Whereas if you and I had a Rick Smith, Bill O'Brien relationship, it would feel very much like, well, I think this is the player, you think this is the player, and you're making that move.
Even if you agree on it.
It doesn't feel like, so it doesn't feel like you're doing it together.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. And it doesn't have to be one way or the other. Each organization is different. You know, I remember hearing stories about the Redskins back when Gibbs was in charge, you know, and Gibbs wanted everybody's input, but at the end of the day, Gibbs was the damn genius in the room.
Yeah.
And Gibbs' decision was going to go. So as long as you have a genius in charge, I have no problem with it being just a dictatorship. If you don't have a genius in charge, maybe less of a dictatorship.
Next headline, the second round of the Masters underway a little bit later today. Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka are your leaders at the Masters at 6 under. Phil Mickelson was terrific yesterday. He is one shot behind. Tiger Woods is 2 under par. For you to get really into the Masters on Sunday, Tiger's got to be in the mix, right?
Like, no.
No?
No.
No?
It all depends. I just need some kind of, I don't even need to know the name of the guy. And a lot of times in the Masters, you always know the name of the guy. I don't even need it to be a notable person in the mix as long as it's an exciting finish.
Here's what
now,
I like.
Now, am I going to be more engaged than Tiger? Mike, you're not that guy. You're not the guy that needs Tiger to be involved for you to get intrigued.
Well, I just wanted to ask the question. No,
you asked it like, well, it's got to be Tiger, right? Tiger's got to be involved for you to get intrigued.
I assumed it for you, but
for me? Oh.
I was
okay.
Incorrect.
I see.
Here's what I do like, this is a totally
xenophobic. A little respect you have for me.
This is a totally xenophobic
take. Jonesy, right? Is that pretty much like Seth? You're a simple creature. If you know, you're not going to pay attention unless it's Tiger. Okay.
You know what I like? I like seeing all the American flags up at the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
I like that. I know it's a xenophobic take, but I like it. Listen, I feel this way about the U.S. Open, but I also feel it about the Masters. Like this is our deal.
That is a Xena, the Warrior Princess.
This is our tournament. So when I look at the leaderboard right now, I'm looking at it, I see American flag, American flag, American flag.
Who's the first nine?
American flag.
Who's the first? Who's that?
Ian Poulter. Who's annoying? Because he is always good.
What is he?
He competes for Europe in the Ryder Cup. Whatever that. What is that?
Scottish?
I think that's Scotland. Possibly, maybe. That looks like the Scottish flag. I don't know.
It's all close enough.
You're asking me too many questions on the spot. Stop it.
Hey, I'm just a Tiger Woods fan. I don't know all these other things.
Mike and Seth, Paul is off until Tuesday because of his birthday. He is turning 30, and he is having a celebratory weekend.
He's
so
English. Ian Poulter's English.
English. There you go. Yeah. So the terrible job by me not knowing the flag, poor job, Time now for positive
no,
Paul.
No, that's not an English flag.
What is it?
That's not the, I don't know. I don't know what that flag that is.
All right, we're going to find
that's
out
like
here.
It's like a Swiss flag.
We're going to figure this out. But while we do, positive Paul. All right, I'm going to fill in for positive Paul this morning. I had my first cigar last night.
Oh, really?
Ever. Yes,
yeah?
I had my first cigar. I've never
How'd
smoked
that happen?
My parents don't smoke cigars.
Yeah, I know, but it, like you're sitting around at a party or something, and somebody like passed you a cigar, you acted like it was... I remember the first time I saw cocaine at a party and somebody tried to pass it to me and I had like my after school moment, my after school special moment. Like it was perfect. All the propaganda paid off. I was so terrified of
that. You were thinking about that?
I left the party immediately. I was like, what the hell did I get myself into? I'm looking for cops on my way out the door. I was like, I was convinced that everybody in the room was going to die. And it was perfect. Everybody likes to make fun of Nancy Reagan. That crap worked. I was terrified of drugs long past the age of where, like, I started to think, to learn things about the world.
I'm the same way. I was part of DARE and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, okay, so you had your first cigar. How'd you like it?
I enjoyed it. So I'm in this entertainment law class, and they had a cigar night. So we all went to Kirby Ice House yesterday. And I smoked some kind of cigar. I don't know if it was a Cuban cigar or something like that.
Yeah.
Because one of the professors is, like, really, really big into cigars.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of enjoyed it. Now I was incompetent, as you guys would expect, in trying to figure out how to light this thing and keep it light and keep it, you
it's
know,
more of a technique
keep it going.
A cigar than a cigarette.
Yeah, keep it going.
The Marlboros you
burning
typically
at
smoke.
The same rate.
Yeah,
I didn't mind it though. I actually kind of enjoyed the taste.
It's relaxing.
Yeah, it
it's
felt nice relaxing.
Taste. You didn't inhale.
I did not inhale.
Yeah.
Now, my whole goal was do not inhale. Right. Do not inhale. Do not start coughing up a lung.
That'd be a harsh. Upcoming for you.
It would be, yes. So I felt good about my first cigar last night at the age of 33.
I don't, anytime I've ever, I'll enjoy a cigar every now and then if it's like a social thing or something, but I just don't, remember when I did the experiment with the vaping?
Yes.
Where I just, we had read a study about how nicotine can be beneficial in some respects. It's the smoking part of it. It's the smoke that's really bad. So we're like, okay, I'm going to run an experiment where I see if I can feel the effects of nicotine. So I vaped for a little while and I'm like, I feel nothing. And yet, I couldn't stop vaping. And it ended up being like a 2-month ordeal of me quitting vaping because I was hooked on nicotine, even though I never felt any pleasurable effects from it.
Yes.
Kids, don't smoke. Don't vape. Don't do any of it. You'll get hooked. You'll have to like, hey, I almost had to go to damn near therapy to quit this drug that I got no enjoyment from. But I will enjoy a cigar with a whiskey. I've got to have a whiskey with it if I'm having the cigar.
Okay, so whiskey and cigar, that's your combination.
Plus, does everybody, I think a lot of people have this memory of, you probably had like a cool uncle that either smoked a cigar or smoked a pipe. There's something about cigar smoke or pipe smoke that
looks
actually
cool.
Smells nice. Well, it just smells.
It does smell better.
It smells like comforting.
It does.
It smells like
my
home.
Grandfather smoked a pipe for years.
Yeah. And it, so you probably have fond memories of it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's a gentler smell, too. It's not so harsh.
Yeah, it's not
harsh.
It
doesn't feel like it's assaulting your senses the way cigarette smoke does.
Mike and Seth on a Friday. Paul's back on Tuesday. I like the NBA playoffs returning this weekend. We know it's a long deal. It's going to be, you know, the next 2 months here while we sort out who's going to win the 2018-2019 championship. But I'm glad for all the basketball that we're going to be able to see this weekend. The Rockets and Jazz, to me, are the most interesting first-round series. Thunder and Blazers coming in second. I like the return of the NBA playoffs. I know there are a lot of series to keep track of, but I just like having basketball that actually matters, especially after the last month or so.
I was thinking about that this morning on my way in, and I started to get excited about the playoffs because it's almost overwhelming how much good basketball there is, especially past the first round.
Yes.
It's nice to go home every night and be like, oh, there's a good basketball game on. I can enjoy this basketball game. I don't know if I'm allowed to. We'll have to ask Lopez. Am I allowed to watch? What if I want to watch? What if I'm watching Game of Thrones instead of like Eastern Conference semifinals? Can I still be a true basketball fan?
You are not a true basketball nor Eastern Conference fan if you do that. So the NBA playoffs, they return tomorrow, and the first game is going to be on tomorrow. Nets and 76ers on ESPN at 1:30.
Hey, by the way, since we're doing positive Paul, thank you to our listeners. I'm going to be positive. The guy that informed me that the British flag or the English flag is just that red cross. It's not the Union Jack.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why Ian Poulter. That's the flag that Ian Poulter is flying.
I like that Game of Thrones is coming back on Sunday. I'm very excited for that. This is the one show that I still have that I have to watch when it's on live.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also excited that we are doing a lot more radio station events. So a little self-promotion here. We did the Game of Thrones watch party last night. It looked on Facebook like it went really well. Wade Smith, who was one of the maesters who was doing the Q&A last night, is going to be here at 9 o'clock. We did, obviously, our 6-10 opening day last week at Little Woodrow's in Edo. We had the Clints versus Rich Lord at Lucky Strike last week. So we enjoy hanging out with you guys. We're going to try to do as many things as possible over the course of the spring and the summer as well.
There seems to be a much more bigger push to just go out and have a good time, which I'm all for.
Yes.
I'm a fan of having a good time.
Yes, so I think we're going to have Pong Bowl coming up in about a month.
Pong Bowl?
Yes, which I'll let you guys know about. Here's another thing
Look, I don't think we're technically allowed to call it beer pong, but like imagine beer pong played exactly the same way, and that's what we're doing.
And that's basically what we're doing.
Yeah.
Here's what I like. Mike and Seth on a Friday, Mike in for Positive Paul, as I refer to myself in the third person. I like that U of H is selling Ed Oliver bobbleheads, and Ed Oliver's going to keep half the money.
What?
The other half he's actually donating. So U of H, you know how they have these spring
games? Well, they're
games.
Donating half, and he gets half.
I think it's him.
Or he's getting half to donate.
Yeah,
whatever.
He's able to profit from his likeness now that he's going to be in the NFL draft. He'll be selected in 13 days in the first round. U of H is going to have their Friday Night Lights event. That's tonight at TDECU Stadium. So they're going to be selling the Ed Oliver bobbleheads. And half go to him, and half he's donating to Houston Athletics and Cougar Pride as well.
Can I buy a Ed Oliver sideline jacket? I would buy that for a lot of money. Those are sweet jackets.
Those are sweet jackets.
Well, they're capes. You know, that's the nice thing about a sideline jacket. It's a damn cape.
And apparently they're pretty warm.
It's that Walter Payton cape. You know, for Houston's wintry mix when it's 45 degrees out, you can't freeze to death. You need a sideline jacket.
That was one of my favorite stories of the last 8 months in Houston sports. Ed Oliver versus Major Applewhite jacket game. Yes, that was because I have to admit this is where I'm selfish and you know it's a Friday. Usually we're all over the NFL, Texans, and then a story that is just that has everybody willing to express an opinion. All of a sudden just drops right in our lap on a Thursday night.
And I know one of the hot topics was, is this going to hurt Ed Oliver's draft status? I think you got to understand about defensive linemen and the way teams look at them is that. It's almost kind of like, you know, at the end, you know, midway through Full Metal Jacket when Matthew Modine is talking about how the Marines don't want robots. They want people that are almost like on the edge of out of control.
Yes.
And like, I don't know if that's true or not, but in terms of Matthew Modine's version of what the Marines want, that's a little bit of what you want out of your defensive lineman. One of my coaches used to say when they're recruiting, they want guys that are either into fighting or fornicating. Like they gotta be these guys that are just, or both, that are just all about, just, going out and making a stir in life. And Ed Oliver is that guy. They're not going to worry about Jacket Gate.